The following lecture by Clementi, Dr. José María Campos, The Mysteries of Creation, with simultaneous translation into English, was recorded live in Brazil in February 2006.
No estudo anterior, nós falamos
In the preceding study, we spoke a little about the human genetic code, the DNA, and also about the new genetic code, the DNA. And we saw that the position held by spiritual science is totally different to the position held by official science regarding an issue of utmost importance for humanity. For spiritual science, a genetic code is merely a physical, chemical, and electromagnetic composition that determines a hereditary patterns from one species to another, as well as the cellular functioning of each organism. So it is a very simplified view of something that is much greater, as we know. On the other hand, spiritual science expands this view. According to spiritual science, a genetic code also carries vibratory patterns, energy patterns, which propel the human race and the plant and animal species towards the archetype which created those forms, that is, towards the image of perfection which corresponds to each of those created forms. So it is a view that is much broader than simply a physical chemical composition to determine hereditary characteristics. And the new genetic code, the DNA, is being implanted in the consciousness of humans, of those humans who are open to receive the new impulses, the new transformations of the coming times. So this new genetic code is preparing humanity for new expansions of consciousness, for a new cycle of the earth. And we have also seen that the genetic code is actually part of a great code of universal life, which is the source of inspiration and the source of creation of all that exists. We know that life is one in the entire universe, but it makes use of different codes of life, different apparel, to express different sectors of the universe. And from this great cosmic matrix of creation, from this great source of life of creation, energies and vibrations and impulses are drawn to make up those different codes of life according to the needs where each of these forms of life will become manifested. And our genetic code is merely one of these codes. That is, there are other codes of life. For example, take the mineral kingdom. The mineral kingdom has no genetic code. It does not reproduce like a plant, like an animal, like a human being. But the mineral kingdom also has patterns of construction. It has its own laws. It has its own structures. It has its own cycle of evolution. It has its laws of evolution. However, it is not the same genetic code used for the other kingdoms. It is a code for mineral life. And this mineral life is also present in the entire universe. This mineral kingdom is not unique to the earth. Therefore, this code of universal life governs the different codes of life that are expressed in each universe, wherever life is also meant to be manifested. And we also saw that there are great cosmic consciousnesses, cosmic hierarchies, whose main task is to accompany and guide the development of the human races and of the mineral, plant, animal, and human species, and also other forms of life. And these creator consciousnesses, these cosmic consciousnesses, are known symbolically as the space gardeners, and on Earth these space gardeners contributed to the unfolding of the races that make up, that form, current humanity of the surface. And so they worked on this process of creation, and they continue to work on this process of guiding the human race and all the species of the various kingdoms that are also developing here on Earth. And this hierarchy, the space gardeners, works together with another hierarchy, the hierarchy of the devas. Together, the space gardeners and this Devic hierarchy shape the patterns that the new forms of life, that the new human races have to take on in order to fulfill the purpose of their existence. That is, each created species, each organism, and each race has a goal to be attained. And so these hierarchies collaborate with this so that these forms of life may fulfill the aim of their existence. Today, science has as its principal goal to discover and unveil the mysteries of nature. All the efforts, all the energy, all the dedication of science is applied to unveiling the mysteries of nature. On the other hand, chemistry, which is an important branch of this science, attempts to create and construct the things which can be observed in nature. While one tries to unveil the mysteries of nature, the other tries to reproduce, create, and construct those things which are observed in nature. And in the last 100 years, this chemistry, this science, has evolved greatly and has learned how to cluster more than 1,000 atoms using practically all the molecular models found in nature. Even this current level of complexity that science and that chemistry have attained in the last decades is practically nothing compared to what surrounding nature is telling us. All we have to do is look at the diversity to see how far away we still are from attempting to build something like nature. All that is manifested is clustered by means of very delicate linkages, among those particles that make up matter, among the atoms and the molecules. Everything that is created from a simple cell to an enormous jatobá tree or a tall eucalyptus tree, everything is put together by myriads of fragile linkages among elementary particles, among atoms and molecules. And this process, these fragile linkages that exist among these particles that make up matter, govern the clustering of everything that exists in the universe. All that is manifested in the universe is based on these subtle forces that unify particles, which will then form the material structure of everything that is manifested in the universe. And so these fragile linkages, among the particles that make up matter, enable structures, forms, and substances to become clustered into more and more complex patterns. That is, taking off from a very simple form, the clustering of particles and atoms can enable the creation of increasingly complex patterns. For example, the creator energies that work on the subtle substance that exists on the threshold between the concrete world and the etheric levels. These creator energies then begin to cluster, they begin to amalgamate the subtle substance from this level, and so as these energies draw brought together, they give rise to elementary particles that are still on the threshold between the two worlds, between an almost material world and a material world. This process of agglomeration keeps on going and forms the particles, the subatomic particles, that later will make up the atoms. The atoms will form molecules, the molecules will cluster and form substances, and substances will permeate all that is living in nature. And these substances, the fats, the lipids, that are so important for our makeup, our material and energy structure, as these substances agglomerate, they contribute to the formation of the double wall of the cellular membrane. And these cells become formed, these cells become clustered to form tissue. The tissue forms organs. The organs make up the various organisms from the simplest to the most complex organisms. And today chemistry comes nowhere near what nature does routinely. Take, for example, the creation of a cell. The creation of a cell is something so commonplace or so simple for nature, and science hasn't a vague idea of the life of the dynamic that is present in each cell. We are really very far away from the mysteries of creation. And science has a hard time penetrating the mysteries of creation because it is based on an incorrect premise of what life is about. For science, life emerges from below. For science, life comes about through the increasingly complex clustering of material particles. So as the particles become clustered, forming atoms, molecules, substances, and organisms, at a certain moment, one of these experiences is successful, and then the evolutionary process takes care of perfecting that organism that was created. Thus, science has a very simplistic view of the origin of life here on Earth. Spiritual science has a totally different view of the origin of life. According to spiritual science, life pre-exists the manifestation of form. Life does not need form to exist, but makes use of different material apparel to express itself in the material world. So it is a different process. Life comes from the divine source of creation, from universal life, which, as it reaches the various universes, this life then uses the different material apparel to become manifested. So this rather limited view of science in regard to the origin of life also puts limits on the fact that science would be able to penetrate profoundly these mysteries of creation, and so also work creatively in collaboration with these laws, with these energies that work on this level of the manifestation of the universe. So in order to go into these mysteries of creation a little deeper, one has to understand the meaning of an archetype. An archetype is a nucleus, a concentration of energies created by the universal mind, by the divine mind, that acts as a polarizing agent, as a catalyzing agent, as a start-up point, as an original impulse for the manifestation of patterns and forms and structures that life can take on to express itself. Behind each manifestation in the physical world, there is an archetype, there is an idea, there is a design that corresponds to that form, and that creates that form when it is manifested, when it becomes expressed here in the material world. And these archetypes also carry within them the impulses that will guide these forms to fulfill the purpose of their existence. Each one of these forms of life is meant to attain the original pattern of perfection which corresponds to it. The impulse which steers the form towards attaining its original pattern of perfection is also present within an archetype. And from this perspective, the evolutionary path of each form, of each organism, of each kingdom, consists precisely in seeking this original idea, this idea that created the form. Human bodies, our material bodies, are also created according to the archetypical patterns. And these archetypical patterns flow from this source of creation of the cosmos, that is, this divine source of creation. And when these archetypical patterns are emanated by the universal mind, they are then gathered up by cosmic hierarchies, by these cosmic consciousnesses, which we call the space gardeners. And these hierarchies gather up these archetypical patterns and process these patterns and imprint them on the cosmic ethers in areas of the cosmos where life is meant to be expressed. And these archetypes that are imprinted on the cosmic matrix then outline, they design those basic lines of construction for a given body. The archetypes are then imprinted and begin to draw the subtle substance of that level, those creative forces and energies that are active on that level. And that will bring about the material bodies with which we are familiar. So as we have seen, the process of creation takes place from the top down, that is, starting with an archetype, and this archetype eventually produces a form. And so it is at this point of creation that another hierarchy, the Devic hierarchy, comes in and takes these archetypical patterns and molds, forms the subtle models on this etheric level of everything that is meant to be manifested here on the concrete material level. We have seen that this hierarchy of the space gardeners works together with the hierarchy of the devas. The devas are a line of evolution that is parallel to the line of evolution of the human being. And unlike human beings, the devas are faithful in fulfilling the part of the plan of evolution that pertains to them. We know that the great majority of humans are not even aware that the plan of evolution exists. And for us to become aware of the existence of the plan of evolution requires a long process of drawing near and a long process of embracing this idea, this teaching about the plan of evolution. Then we need more lives in which to begin to collaborate consciously with this manifestation of the plan of evolution. And as we know, this process is full of steps forward, full of disruptions and of steps backwards. On the other hand, the devas are faithful in fulfilling the part of the plan of evolution that pertains to them. And they fulfill themselves in this process. They express profound joy in fulfilling this plan of evolution, so different to our reality. In order for the devas to fulfill this plan of evolution faithfully, they are exempt from the influences of retrograde forces, which are the very impulses that influence human evolution and that hinder human evolution. And all this striving to fulfill the part of the plan of evolution that is up to humans to manifest. So these devas have no physical body. The etheric levels are their boundaries of contact with the concrete world. That is, their field of expression, their field of action, reaches as far as the boundaries with the concrete world, these etheric levels. And one of the main tasks of this devic hierarchy is to deal with substances. All that is encompassed by creation, all that refers to transformation, to destruction, to regeneration of substances and forms, all this is the field of action of this devic hierarchy. And to fulfill this role correctly, the devas maintain a close linkage with the elemental forces of nature that we call the elemental kingdom, the forces of fire, the forces of air, the forces of water, and the forces of earth. So with these elements, working with the elemental kingdom, they accomplish the process of manifestation of the creation of form here in the concrete world. And on these etheric levels, where the devas, where this hierarchy is also very active, these devas build and destroy images, structures, and patterns. It is an ongoing process of creation and destruction, of renovation and transformation. And on these etheric levels, the devas then compose the subtle models of the forms that will become manifested here in the concrete material world. And after having designed, after having composed this subtle model of what should become manifested on the etheric levels, the devas then fill these models with material substances and elements. And the devas also work in consonance with the designs of the creator hierarchies, that is, the space gardeners. This makes it possible for the archetypical patterns that are gathered up and imprinted on the cosmic ethers by the space gardeners to become expressed, to become constructed here in the material world of forms with their corresponding patterns of life. So these devas are essentially creator spirits, spirits that transform all this substance on the levels of consciousness where we also exist, that is, the mental, emotional, and physical etheric levels. So this hierarchy is also active on these levels of consciousness, building and destroying forms, building and destroying structures, patterns, and everything that is to be manifested, and everything that is to be renewed in regard to the evolution of a given being, of a given consciousness. So this process, this action of the devas on these levels of consciousness is also essential in the healing processes. As we know, in the processes of healing, we need new energy structures, new material patterns have to be built in our bodies. The obsolete patterns, the outdated patterns that no longer correspond to our stage of evolution have to be dissolved. Processes have to be regenerated, transformed, elevated, sublimated. So this hierarchy is active in this process, always in consonance with the designs of the higher hierarchies, in consonance with the beings in a self, in consonance with all the levels of consciousness that also take part in the process of creation and evolution of a given life, of a given being, of a given organism within the human being. So the question is, how are these subtle models transposed to this concrete material world. This archetype that is imprinted on the cosmic matrix begins to function as a resonating element that begins to emit sounds which are vibratory patterns. And these vibratory patterns then begin to attract that subtle substance, those subtle energies and forces from that level. And then they begin to agglomerate this subtle substance. And this gradual process of agglomeration goes on until it takes shape, until it takes on density, and it goes on creating the particles that are on the threshold between these two worlds. So the particles go on emerging, the particles form atoms, the atoms make up the molecules cluster to form substances, and all living organisms are formed through this process. So from this perspective, chemistry is the language that enables this creator idea to become transposed into the concrete world. It is as though chemistry were on the threshold between these two worlds. In the subtle world, these subtle forces are active and begin to agglomerate the subtle substances on that level. They begin to agglomerate the subtle forces and energies. That is, chemistry acts like a subtle chemistry, like a higher alchemy. It deals with the substance of this subtle level, and it deals with its specific laws of attraction and interaction. And when these particles, when these energies have already become aggregated, now on this side, chemistry deals with the interaction among substances, the interaction among atoms, molecules and substances, the way we know today. So chemistry is more than a mere interaction among material particles, as we learn in school. That is, a mere attraction, a mere electromagnetic and physical chemical interaction among particles. Chemistry is the language that makes it possible then for the creator energies to decode, that is, to translate, to transport this creator idea here to the world of forms. Chemistry has this capacity to contact these subtle levels where the creator idea is present as a subtle design, and at the same time, it can condense the material particles and bring this subtle model down here to the concrete world. So when science discovers chemistry in this perspective, when science understands chemistry from this point of view, much progress will take place in the practical life of humanity. Today, there is an opportunity to work directly in a conscious, creative, evolutionary collaboration with these energies, with this creator hierarchy. The doors to this are really opening. And this has always taken place in the history of humanity, but it has always happened in an isolated way. For example, the great discoveries have always taken off from this process. At a given moment, an idea, an inspiration, an intuition coming from another level has to take on form in the mind of the person who is the receiver channel for that process. So that divine idea, the inspiration that is still subtle, has to become embodied. It has to take on form within the consciousness of the individual who is receiving that process. During the process of the transposition of this still subtle idea to the level of consciousness, to the level of concrete consciousness of that individual, the Devic hierarchy is also present. That is, this working of densifying, of drawing, of agglutinating this idea and bringing it into the material consciousness of that individual is the work of the Devic hierarchy. So all the great discoveries that changed the history of humanity here on the surface of the earth got started in this process. So these doors have always been open. But at selected times, at widely spaced intervals, these moments were very well conducted by this consciousness that governs the evolution of humanity here on the surface of the earth.
preparando esse estudo,
a short while ago, while I was preparing the study, I had the opportunity to travel to São Paulo with someone who is very open and receptive to these abstract ideas. And we got into this theme of creation. I was highly motivated with all this process, these mysteries of creation, this process of the genetic code, this process of archetypical patterns of the creator hierarchies. I was imbued with this process, not only mentally, but my entire being participated in this process. And at a certain moment of this interaction that was going on between the two of us, I spontaneously expressed to my fellow traveler, in consciousness, I would like to penetrate these mysteries of creation and in consciousness penetrate deep within this process, the dynamics of this process, and really understand and see inside this process. And while I was still expressing this request, this desire, the person at my side smiled and pointed to a truck that was passing us on the highway. I looked at the truck, and on the bumper, in large letters, to leave no doubt, the following was written: it's difficult, but it is not impossible. At that time, we laughed the way you are laughing, because there was a sign that a confirmation was being given at that precise moment. Not a confirmation to that request, to that desire, but a confirmation that today these doors are open to humanity. All humans have to do is be willing to follow this path, which is not very wide, this narrow path that leads to these portals and these mysteries of creation. But the doorways are really open to humanity today. And still imbued with this process, another experience that I had some time ago came to my mind, and it can somewhat illustrate this process. I was walking with someone along a road, and the person was sharing a series of problems she was undergoing at the time. The entire problem stemmed from the instinctive reproductive area, this emotional affective area. And one could see by what she was saying and by the whole vibration that the source of that process was not in the present life. In this life, the person had not had a chance to create all those things, but the problem came from the person's former lives. And just then, it came out in that way, with all those problems. We were walking along, and when we were about to go through a wooden gate, when I noticed that high up in a tree, some very transparent liquid was dripping down. The liquid seems to drip from a foamy structure, a white spongy structure. Right away, a concise understanding came to me that the manifestation of the liquid had something to do with the process that the person was describing. It was just an impression. I kept it within me in silence. Short while later, we parted, and I went back to that tree to continue the research process. I climbed the tree and noticed that around some of the branches there was a foamy structure, somewhat like a white sponge. And this transparent liquid was dripping from that sponge. Since I had no way to go on researching up on the tree, I cut a branch and took the branch to the lab. I put the branch in a jar of water, not to dry out. And a few hours later, when I came back, to my surprise, the work table where the jar stood and the floor around were full of insects. They seemed to be the same insect, but at different stages of development, from the very young insects to adult insects. I took one of the insects, which seemed to be in adult form, and placed it under a magnifying glass to see it close up. It was very interesting because I seemed to be looking at a miniature prehistoric animal. That is, the form that insect had did not match the forms of life that are familiar today on the face of the earth, but it looked like one of those prehistoric animals, those primitive animals, except that it was a miniature. I found this very strange, and this impression stayed with me. Then I began to examine the white foam to see what was happening there. And this foam was transparent, so under the magnifying glass one could see that inside that foam there was an adult insect that seemed to be the procreator or one of the procreators of all those offspring. And it was very interesting that this insect was carrying out peristaltic abdominal movements, that is, rhythmic contractions with its abdomen, and air bubbles like soap bubbles came out of its anus, except that the walls of these bubbles were very compact. They didn't burst and they didn't merge, but they formed clusters, and they clustered around the insect and increased and covered a large part of the branches from that tree. And inside that foam, inside that liquid environment, inside that matter, there was some proteinic, mucus type of matter, not sticky, but fairly resistant matter. So inside that sponge, that progenitor insect was laying the eggs so that the offspring could break out there and go through their reproductive process. And at that moment, another encapsulated understanding came to me. That being, that insect, was really a remnant of a primitive form of life. It was a primitive form of life that had already existed in bygone ages of Earth, but specifically in the beginnings of Atlantis. As we know, in those times, the atmosphere of the Earth was not this transparent atmosphere we have today. The atmosphere of the Earth was filled with a milky proteinic substance, somewhat like a very dense mist that covered all the Earth. And it was within this milky proteinic atmosphere, in there, that lives were manifested during the remote past of the Earth. And so these insects were a remnant of that phase of the Earth's development, and they needed a certain energy setting that existed in that early atmosphere and that can no longer exist today. Today, we no longer have the atmosphere from Atlantis here on Earth. So to do this, they had to build that foamy structure to reproduce within it that energy environment that corresponded to that early phase on Earth so that they could procreate. That is, a certain stage of their reproductive process depended on this energy environment which existed in that ancient phase on Earth. And so in there, in this foam, this fluid, those insects could evolve. And when they attained the phase of adult evolution, they would go back to the Earth and then continue their existence here on Earth. So in a way, that foam was really like a tunnel of time. We imagine a tunnel of time in those labs with highly sophisticated technology. And there a simple insect, which from the point of view of botany was a blight on that tree. See how science looks at things in a totally short-sighted, distorted way. That was a tunnel of time. Something that enabled those insects to return to an energy environment of the past on Earth, undergo a process, and then come back to the present time on Earth. And how did this happen? That insect, the progenitor, used the sap of that tree, that is, it fed on the sap of that tree in order to cooperate with this process of producing a substance that would create the foam. This substance produced in the intestines made it possible to create, to build up this foam, this milky white foam, this proteinic, mucus type of substance. And this liquid, the sap of this tree, also permeated the foamy structure to moisten the structure. Otherwise, in a short while in contact with the atmosphere of the earth, it would become dehydrated. So then that liquid was used on that insect. It flowed through the structure and moistened the structure in a kind of plunge into the tunnel of time. It contacted this vibratory state of the early phase of the earth, became infused with the vibrations of that atmosphere, and then dripped down in the form of that transparent liquid. So that foam that isolated the Atlantean atmosphere from the atmosphere of the earth, when the liquid penetrated that tunnel of time, it became impregnated with those vibrations and energies. And as it dripped, it brought imprinted in itself these energies, these vibrations, and at that moment another encapsulated understanding came through. If one could take that liquid to a lab and dynamize that liquid, then those regenerating forces, those creative forces transposed into a subtle medication would help the process of dissolving those nodules of energy, those nodules of traumas that had been created by the person who, in the beginning of this narrative, had been telling me about the instinctual and reproductive problems that had been created during the past phases of development of the earth, when that person had probably allowed those nodules, those traumas, to become imprinted in her subtle energy structure. And that liquid, now transformed into medication, transformed into a subtle medication, could help to dissolve those nodules created in the same interaction of forces. So we can see how broad the possibilities are for creative, constructive, evolutionary interaction with these planes, these levels, with these mysteries of creation. Everything that involves healing has to do with the dissolving of nodules, of energy structures, of the vibratory patterns of our bodies that no longer conform to our present stage of consciousness. The dissolving of nodules of energy cores that had been created in former lives or even in the present life and that are embedded there in the energy material structure of a being. So in the process of dissolving, in the process of purification, in the process of transmutation, of the destruction of these forms, this hierarchy is present, is working. So when we begin a work of collaboration, a work of co-creation with this energy on these subtle levels, where this subtle chemistry, where this higher chemistry, this alchemy is operating, all this is a question of the process of a being's consciousness. On this threshold of the consciousness and the material levels, so on this level of subtle chemistry, anything can happen. And from then on, in the chemical structure of our bodies, the material structure of our bodies, what we need for our healing processes can take on a new dimension. And how great are the possibilities of service when these doors will really effectively become open. Service to the kingdoms, service to life, processes of nutrition, processes of healing. How great are the possibilities when humanity will cross those portals, when humanity will really get in contact with these mysteries of creation. And then many miracles can happen. I'm going to read what is written on the board. The first part is from the book The Resurgence of Fatima List, page 123. Occult facts in spiritual science and the laws of the universe, of chemistry, of physics, and of botany have their keys safeguarded through contact with the devas and the elementals. Humans will not get to know these realities simply by wanting. Interaction with the hierarchy of the devas takes place by the purity of a life that is surrendered to the Supreme Being and formed through absolute obedience to the law of love. The other passage is from the voice of Amar, page 49, articles 20-21.
A colaboração com reinos paralelos para a parte da vida futura desta humanidade.
Will be part of the future life of this humanity.
E não está distante o tempo em que ocorrerá abertamente.
When this will happen openly.
Muitos milagres vereis na atual transição.
Many miracles in the current transition of the cycle.
Não serão mais que uma ínfima parcela.
They will be no more than a tiny part of the plenitude that is in store for the planet.
Vocês têm alguma pergunta?
Are there any questions? Yes?
Se o pensamento humano pode influenciar esse processo de contato com a hierarquia dévica?
Can the human thought this process of contact with the devic hierarchy? All vibrations from physical material, concrete vibrations, to the subtle vibrations of our emotions, of our feelings, of our thoughts, of our reactions, all these interact directly with this entire process. They can influence this process positively, or they can influence this process negatively, or even obstruct, destruct part of this process. Here we have already studied several experiences of the influence of sound, of vibrations on material elements, for example, in organizing and conducting material particles. Sound also vibrates on water. Molecules of water are also receptive to vibrations of sound, to vibrations of thought, of emotions. That is, all vibrations are very sensitive, much more so than are these subtle levels of our consciousness, where everything is much more dynamic. All these processes, all these vibrations which we generate also intervene directly in this process, either positively or negatively, depending on the quality of what we are emitting.